In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies. It is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, photographing seances, physical mediums, and ectoplasm.
You sit in the dark and then a small light goes on and you see white substances with tiny pictures in them. And then all of a sudden, then it disappears. So you're not even really sure what you saw. And he allowed me to photograph this. And when it happened, it looks just like the vintage images that you see.
This podcast is brought to you by International Star Registry. Choosing a gift for someone special can be a daunting task. Whether it's a birthday, Mother's Day, Father's Day, anniversary, or any other big day, you want a gift that's unique and perfect for that person who already has everything. International Star Registry can help. They've been providing unique gift ideas for over 25 years. International Star Registry lets you name an actual star in the sky after your special someone. Name a star after someone you care about and they'll remember it forever and never forget your thoughtfulness. The address is getarealstar.com. Getarealstar.com and give someone the gift of a real star in the sky. That address again, getarealstar.com.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serrett.
Happy Friday. Hey, don't forget the weekly draw. I'll tell you how to enter later on. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I was at my mom's and I found a shoebox of old photographs. Some of mine were mixed in there, and I found one I hadn't thought about in quite some time. Maybe 17 years ago, I was working at CFRB 1010 in Toronto, hosting a late-night program, and I took some listeners on a ghost walk through Mount Pleasant Cemetery once the sun went down. And we had a paranormal investigator with us. She encouraged us to bring cameras along and to take pictures whenever we felt suddenly compelled to do so. And I took a total of one photograph, I think. I passed by this family mausoleum in the cemetery, very old, and the name kind of struck me as odd. So I thought, I'll take a picture of this. The name on the mausoleum was Fluke, F-L-U-K-E. So again, I thought, why not? I took the photo and I took the film to be developed across from the radio station, a Japan camera, I think. And remember that developing film? Anyway, lo and behold, the one cemetery photo I took of the mausoleum showed this strange streak of kind of bluish-green light above the mausoleum. It almost was streaking across the frame. Pretty cool, I thought. Okay, not exactly definitive proof of life after death, and I can't say one way or the other whether it's a spirit apparition, but I'm sure many of you have similar photos. Strange orbs that could be a dust particle or a lens flare or your late Uncle Harold coming by to say hi. But in the early days of photography, many believed and hoped that the camera would prove more efficient than the human eye in capturing the unseen. And spiritualists of the 19th century seized on this new technology as a method of substantiating the existence of supernatural beings and happenings. We're going to talk about spirit photography over the next 40 minutes or so. Shannon Taggart is a photographer based in Brooklyn, New York, whose work blurs the line between art, anthropology, and the paranormal. Her photographs have been exhibited and featured internationally, including within the publications of Time, New York Times Magazine, Discover, and Newsweek. From 2014 to 2016, she was scholar and artist in residence at the Morbid Anatomy Museum in New York. And her fabulous collection of photographs depicting the new spiritualist movement is called Seance, Spiritualist Ritual and the Search for Ectoplasm. Sharon Taggart, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Great book. Beautiful book, Seance. Now, as a photographer, did you approach this subject of spiritualism and the paranormal as someone who is interested in the paranormal, maybe who had experiences, or were you simply looking at this as a great subject matter for a book on photography?
Well, I actually was drawn to the topic of spiritualism because my cousin had a reading with a medium that revealed some details about my grandfather's death that proved to be true. And before that, I didn't know anything about spiritualism or mediumship at all. And I was working as a professional photographer. I was doing newspaper photography and public relations photography. And I thought I'd spend one summer doing a short project about a quirky little town called Lilydale, mm-hmm. which was all spiritualists. And instead, the project evolved into a 17-year epic work on the topic of spiritualism.
And I have to ask you, how did you get Dan Aykroyd, a fellow Canadian, to contribute to this book? He wrote the foreword.
So Dan Aykroyd is actually a fourth generation spiritualist. And so, you know, in Ghostbusters, when he's using terms like ectoplasm, that's really coming from his real knowledge of spiritualism and his own family history. And so Dan happened to be in Lilydale, this town where I began my project, and we met, and he liked my work, so he offered to write the foreword.
Oh, fabulous. That's a terrific coup. Good for you.
Yes.
And I have to also ask you, you were a scholar and artist in residence at, I love this name, the Morbid Anatomy Museum in New York. Tell me about that.
So the Morbid Anatomy Museum, the actual physical space is sadly closed. It closed last year, but it's still working as a project. So Morbid Anatomy it began as a blog that was about a history of medicine and where that collides with art and the topic of death and popular culture. So spiritualism kind of fits into that umbrella, being a religion that believes that we can speak with the dead. So that's how I kind of got associated with Morbid Anatomy. But we do all sorts of lectures and books and exhibitions about this intersection between death and art and popular culture and history.
Well, speaking of history, what did you learn about the spiritualist movement? Obviously, it was very, very big in Great Britain, I guess, what, late 19th century into the, well, right into the maybe the mid-20th century, and part of that was transplanted here in America. But what did you learn about the spiritualist movement maybe that fascinated you?
Well, actually, I I learned so much interesting, so many interesting facts that's part of the reason my project became this long work. And spiritualism actually began in America. It began in 1848 in upstate New York, which, you know, it's a uniquely American religion that then traveled to Europe and then, you know, through the Americas, you know, so it took off and still is more alive in places like Brazil or England than it is in America. But, you know, it began in upstate New York in an area called the Burned Over District, very close to where Mormonism began, where the Shaker movement began, a lot of utopian communities. So it's this very unique moment in American history where there was this religious kind of, you know, big epic blow up of religion in the farmlands of upstate New York.
Did you spend any time discussing the Fox Sisters or researching the Fox Sisters?
Yes, because the Fox Sisters are the accidental founders of the movement. I mean, they were young girls, I think 11 and 13, when they began. They claimed they were communicating with the spirit of a dead man who was buried beneath their home. And they were communicating and getting information with him with a knocking using the alphabet. They called it, it became to be known as their spiritual telegraph to his spirit. And their older sister kind of started taking them around and showing people that they could talk with spirits. And then it just exploded into a movement. So it was an accidental kind of founding of a religion, but they are sort of the patron saints, you know, that consider the founders of this religious movement of spiritualism.
And you mentioned Lilydale, New York, which is, as you point out, the home of the world's largest spiritualist community. And you went there after your cousin received this reading from a medium about your grandfather's death.
Yes.
Tell me about Lilydale. Has it become sort of a kitschy tourist place, or do you think it has sort of remained true to the spiritualist movement?
Oh, that is one thing that I find totally amazing about Lilydale is there is this very, it's almost like going into a time warp, the town of Lilydale, because they have kept something from that era alive. I always joke and kind of describe it as an analog town. You know, now when we're in this digital age and everything is, you know, really, really digitized, it feels still very like you are in another era. The homes are these Victorian cottages, and many of them are the same structures that were built in the late 1880s. You know, it's been there, I think it was founded in 1878, and it's kind of tucked away on a lake, so it's really separated from any other city. It's kind of in this remote area, and it was built over where land that was sacred to Native Americans. So it has this otherworldly feel because you have to travel there, and, you know, it's these older structures that are still intact, and they are practicing traditional spiritualism. Now, during the summer, they also have, you know, psychic courses or things that would be considered more new age, but the crux of their content is true to the spiritualist tradition.
And I guess this sort of kicked off your research, because some of the photos in this chapter date back to 2001, so we're going back 17 years, and there's a photo of a woman named Dorothy standing in the doorway of her house with this purple orb right smack dab in the photo, sort of hovering over her left shoulder. Tell me about that photo.
Yes, that's one of the first, I call them my accidental images that I began to make, where I had something bizarre happened with my camera that I couldn't explain. So I was photographing this woman. Her name is Dorothy, and she was a volunteer at the Lilydale Museum. And I was shooting film at the time, and I got on two different rolls of film in two different frames. I got a large purple orb that was on her shoulder. It was on the same shoulder in both images at the same spot of her body. And I really couldn't explain how I got this orb because I wasn't shooting into the sun and it wasn't lens flare. I had never gotten anything like this before. So I printed the pictures and I brought them to her. And I said, you know, I took these pictures. I got this very weird purple orb near you. And she looked at the pictures and said, oh, that's my husband, Bob. And she really believed that it was Bob's energy that was, you know, breaking through and showing himself, his energy to my camera. You know, now a professional photographer would say it's got to be some just fluke in the film processing or some sort of light leak, you know, but she really felt that it was his energy. And so that kind of idea is one of the themes of the book. It's like photographic anomaly. Is there meaning involved? Can we photograph things you can't see?
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, I've seen, you know, dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of pictures from amateur photographers, and they say, well, look at that. That's an orb. And I've taken a few and have seen this phenomenon. But you're a professional photographer. How do you, can you explain the presence of that particular orb? As you say, you know, most often it could be a dust particle or a lens flare. What about this particular photo?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't really have any answers. But my working theory, you know, the thing that I'm most interested in is, you know, nowadays there's a lot of people trying to photograph this orb phenomena, and many of them are using these smaller digital cameras. And when you have a photographer analyze this, they'll say, oh, it's just dust or it's just water, and that's all that's happening in the images. But when I've spent time with people who photograph orbs, it's not so much about what is causing the orbs, it's about that they're trying to have an interaction with these orbs, meaning they'll call them in. They'll say, okay, we're going to ask the orbs to fill up the room. And I've seen images where slowly they take pictures, and then by the end of the series, there'll be a room full of orbs. Or they'll zoom in on orbs and try to see faces and then compare the faces to images of their loved ones. I myself had a very weird experience when I went into the mountains of Sardinia with some orb photographers who told me if they said their prayers, I would get tons and tons of orbs in my images. And I normally do not get lots of orbs in my images. And lo and behold, I took a photo, and I did. I got it. That image is on my website. I took a picture, and it was just orbs upon orbs upon orbs. As far as you can zoom in, there's just you still see orbs, and it wasn't raining and there wasn't a storm of insects. So I really cannot explain why I got those orbs at that time. So I think it's the real bizarre thing about the orbs is the synchronicities that happen, or when people try to kind of communicate with these orbs. I find that fascinating. It really is. Sometimes it can get real bizarre.
I was going to ask you whether, in retrospect, after taking on this project, you think you got more than you bargained for.
I have had some strange experiences with my camera, and also receiving messages or having experiences with mediums. But at the same time, I've also had a lot of really silly or hilarious experiences, or experiences that were not meaningful. So it is a kind of, you know, I feel like it's not a topic that you can make a definitive book about. I am just trying to kind of raise questions and kind of delve into the mystery of this phenomena of mediumship and the religion of spiritualism.
Sticking with Lilydale, because that's sort of where this project all began, again, your sister's experience, at a place called Inspiration Stump. Tell me about that.
So Inspiration Stump is a place, it's deep in the woods, and in Lilydale they have these virgin woods forests that some of the trees are some of the oldest in North America. And you go deep into the woods, and there's these benches, and I guess it could probably seat around 200 people. So it's almost like a outdoor little cathedral. And there's a stump that has been cut down, and that's where the mediums stand. And it's a place that's sacred to spiritualists and spiritualism at Lilydale. And so the mediums stand in the front of all these benches, and they just pick out strangers and give them short messages from the spirit world. And that is where my cousin went. So a lot of it wasn't like she wrote down her name and the medium could have researched her or anything. You go anonymously. So it does kind of lend itself to having a mysterious experience, because you know you don't even know what medium is going to show up there, and then they don't know that they don't know you because you haven't signed up for it. It's just you go as you want. You go anonymously. So those message services can be really interesting.
And what information was imparted to your cousin by this medium about your grandfather's death that no one could have known?
Well, I mean, he was dying of cancer in the hospital, but actually what killed him was not the cancer. There was some kind of accident where he was given food and actually choked to death, and that's how he died. And that's the detail that was revealed. And everybody was just always told, oh, he died of brain cancer, which is what he did have and he was dying of, but that's not what caused his death. And that, as far as I know, is not written anywhere in my family. It's not like we had a text that told us that. It was just people knew. They just didn't talk about it. And it was not revealed to me or other members of my immediate family until my cousin came back with this story from Lilydale. So it was kind of, when I heard the story, I said, how could somebody possibly know something like that? You know, that's so weird. And it had happened 30 years prior to.
That is remarkable. Did it take a lot of time to gain the trust of some of the subjects in this book? For example, you have photographs of mediums during actual readings. There's a medium by the name of Gretchen Clark, who's a fifth generation medium. And you're in there snapping photos while she's doing a reading. In this case, we have a photo of her laughing as her deceased brother interrupts this reading, telling her a joke. So did it take a lot of work and effort to gain their trust to allow you to take these photographs?
Yes, but I have to say, from the moment I proposed the project, the people of Lilydale were so welcoming, and they were willing to teach me about their religion, which I knew nothing about. And I think they trusted me because they knew I was truly curious. I have since expanded the project to other places, you know, that are important to spiritualism, like the Arthur Findlay College in England. And I've been all over the world in seance rooms. And, but it was, I really got my start in Lilydale. And I think because those people trusted me, then other spiritualists did as well. But, it did take a while to get into some of the situations, which would be, some of the, Victorian style seance rooms where they do this thing called physical mediumship. That usually, many times they don't allow cameras there. And I have been lucky to be able to photograph some of those.
Yes, I definitely want to come back to the physical mediumship and the ectoplasm. But first, I have to ask you about this photograph of a woman who's said to be channeling her doppelganger. Excuse me. This was taken in 2003. And here we have, you tell me. Tell me about this photograph, because I'm not sure exactly what I'm looking at here.
Yeah, so that photograph was another one of my early synchronicities, where I was in a situation where they had the lights down and we were using a red light, and everybody was supposed to take the red light and sit for transfiguration. That's a spiritualist term for when you try to see if your face changes when you're sitting in the dark, and if the spirits will show up. And this woman had the flashlight over her, and everybody in the room seemed to be seeing a spirit next to her that wasn't her but looked very much like her. And they were saying, oh, maybe it's your grandmother, or maybe it's you in a past life. And everybody was going on and on about this second face that was right next to her face, but it was kind of just slightly off. And I couldn't see this with my eyes. And at the time, I was actually trying to make a very straightforward, sharp image of what was happening. And when I got my film back, I had a picture of this floating face right next to hers that looked like her, but a little bit different. And it actually looked exactly as the people were describing what they saw in their mind's eye. And so that little accident was very thrilling to me, because it actually made an image for the invisible experience that everybody was having. And I didn't do it purposely. My camera shutter, you know, maybe it was a function of her some movement or whatever, but it was so perfectly rendered that I felt compelled to pursue images like that while I was doing my documentary work.
So what I'm hearing is the very practical, almost scientific analysis from Shannon Deckard about what we're seeing on that image. But, I mean, what do you think that is? Truly.
You know, I don't know. The only term that I can use that feels appropriate is it's a photographic synchronicity. Now, what are synchronicities? I don't know, but I've had several where I understand it could be a function of my shutter or the technical apparatus that I'm using, but it correlates so perfectly to the invisible experience. It is it's a compelling synchronicity, and I don't have an answer for that, but I love having these type of pictures in the project because they make the viewer question and interpret what's happening as well. I think images like this come close to giving the viewer of my images an experience like I had when I was in the sitting.
I'm not even an amateur photographer. I mean, I'm the guy that cuts off heads at the Christmas party taking all the photos. But, I mean, I've never seen a double exposure look like that. I've never seen any sort of, as you call it, a synchronicity or a problem with a shutter reproduce an image like that. Is it not possible to have a photograph analyzed to rule out those possibilities?
Well, this is part of the problem with photography, and it actually relates to early spiritualism, where in the beginning spiritualists were trying to scientifically prove the existence of spirits by using photography. And in that era, there was a lot of hope that photography could be used in this scientific way. But now, you know, to answer your question about studying photographs scientific study, is there's too many variables involved with photography for it to be considered a scientific device. You know, it's almost, photography is art and science. It's too subjective. You know, there's too many factors that can play with its truth-telling abilities, if that makes sense.
Oh, sure, so, sure. Photoshop has come a long way.
Mm-hmm. So instead of shying away from this ambiguity, I'm trying to embrace it and see how far I can go with it. And, you know, I'll have a lot of people say, well, why are you bothered doing it? Because you're not proving anything. And then I have other people say, you know, it's just blurry pictures. Who cares? You know, there's nothing compelling here. But I am finding the ambiguity and the strangeness very compelling. So I'm trying to go as far as I can with it and see what happens.
Well, while we remain among the living, we have to take care of ourselves, and our bodies deserve the best. But how do we choose the very best nutritional supplements, or even know what's in them? Life Extension has been helping people stay healthy for over 35 years. Just like with the foods you eat, the quality, purity, and potency of the ingredients in your nutritional supplements really do matter. Life Extension supplements set the gold standard for supporting weight loss, heart, brain, bone, joint, eyes, skin, sexual health, and so much more. Their formulas are based on the latest scientific research and clinically validated dosages. That's one reason why 98% of their customers recommend Life Extension to their friends and family. Every Life Extension product is backed by a total satisfaction guarantee. The bottom line? Life Extension is the brand you can trust with your health. Check out Life Extension products with special savings. Visit SmartClickIdea.com. That's SmartClickIdea.com. SmartClickIdea.com.
Richard has tiny talking insects living in his sock drawer.
We have bags and we are living in Richard's
sock drawer.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Professional photographer Shannon Taggart is here. We're talking about her collection of photographs depicting the spiritualist movement. The resurgence, I suppose, of physical mediumship is fascinating to me. They're calling it the New Age physical medium movement, I guess. Tell me about it.
So when spiritualism began, you know, there was always clairvoyant mediumship, which is, you know, just when you're talking. But then there was these dark seance rooms where the lights were turned out and the mediums would go into trance and they would try to create physical effects. And there were stories of tables tipping and hands touching and voices of the other side coming in. And that would be considered physical mediumship. Now, spiritualism in the modern era has really moved forward in a way very much like what you see on the popular television shows like The Long Island Medium. Or I think there's even a show about a young Hollywood medium or John Edwards, where you're in a light room. It's bright. There's nothing spooky. They're just having a conversation. There's no trance state really involved. I mean, maybe the medium's in a slightly altered consciousness, but nothing too spooky, nothing too strange, and very straightforward. Many people believe this is the way for spiritualism to move forward is this way. And then there is another movement, the New Age of Physical Mediumship within spiritualism, that says, no, we've always done these sensory deprivation, dark seance experiments all throughout our religion. So why should we stop now? We also have to do that too. So it's kind of a controversial topic within spiritualism, whether we need the seance room anymore. What is the way forward? Do we need to do the spooky dark room and go into trance and sit in a medium's cabinet? Or can we just do clairvoyant mediumship out in the open?
Tell me about Sharon Harvey, this physical medium from England.
Sharon Harvey is a physical medium who she sits in a medium's cabinet, which is it's a structure that they build. It's sort of like a spiritualist staging area, I guess. You know, it's a little box, and she sits in it with a little red light and has a circle of sitters sit around her, and she tries to create physical effects and see if she can manifest spirits visually over her face. And I've photographed her many times, and I've had some really strange synchronicities photographing her while she's in this trance state.
Yes. I'm looking at one in which it looks like it's under a red light, and the caption describes her spirit guide revealing his mask. Tell me about
that. So a lot of times I will, when the medium is in the trance state, the person who would be talking, the medium would say they are not talking personally. It's their spirit team or their spirit guide is speaking to you. So Sharon went into a trance, and before her trance, Sharon herself said, you know, don't do any long exposures because everybody thinks those are too iffy for proof. I want you to only do short exposures. And I said, okay, I will. And then she goes into a trance, and then her spirit guide said, I want you to take one long exposure. And during this long exposure, I'm going to show you my mask. And so I did take one long exposure, and the image that resulted was a picture where it looks like her face is being pulled apart and somebody is showing a profile that separates from Sharon's face. And even where it happens, there's like a bright pink light that seems to emerge. You know, and I was not expecting that picture. And once I open the shutter, I have no control over how this long exposure is going to render. So I would consider that one of my synchronicity pictures that I really find fascinating.
Were you able to detect anything with the naked eye? Did you see anything unusual with your naked eye?
No, I mean, sometimes, not in that situation, I did not. But sometimes in these dark rooms with the tiny red light, you do see things. And a neuroscientist would say, you know, you're seeing things because your brain doesn't have enough information in this sensory deprivation kind of, you know, it's very dim red light, and your brain is trying to create a story because it doesn't like the lack of information. And a spiritualist would say, no, you're seeing spirit phenomena. So, you know, it depends on who you ask what you're seeing, but sometimes you do see, you'll see a person's face just totally shift and morph. And it's a very psychedelic experience. It's very bizarre, and that's the transfiguration term that I mentioned before. So, you know, it depends on the person who you ask what is happening in those type of situations.
Right, but the lens doesn't care about sensory deprivation. It's not tricked by sensory deprivation, and yet you have these remarkable photos, like physical medium Gordon Garforth. Tell me about that. This is at the Institute in Stansted, correct?
Yes. And I actually have two very strange experiences with Gordon. The first was that when I first met him, he said, "Oh, yeah, well, I go into trance, and then the spirits, they use ectoplasm to change the shape of my hands." And I thought, okay, I'm probably not going to see anything like this, because I have been in sittings where people say you're going to see these fantastic things and then you don't. But I went to the sitting anyway, and I sat in the front row with my camera, and about 20 minutes in, his wife announced, okay, the spirits are going to work with Gordon's hands right now. And he put forth his hand, and he was wearing a short sleeve shirt, and he moved his hand forward, and all of a sudden it looked like it skipped into this huge, gigantic hand. And I screamed in the middle of the seance room, which is a very impolite thing to be doing in a seance room. You know, you're not supposed to do that. And everybody else started screaming too. So I was thinking, okay, are they screaming because I'm screaming, or did they see this big hand? I was convinced I hypnotically rendered this hand, because I was told I was going to see a hand, and that it, you know, if I got my pictures back or when I looked at my camera, I would see a very small hand. Now what happened is, after the sitting, I looked and I had a picture of this gigantic hand, and it looked different than it did to my eyes. But it was there, no doubt about it, a gigantic hand. And to this day, I have no idea what happened in that situation. I mean, if it was a magic trick, it was a David Copperfield level, most fascinating magic trick, optical illusion I've ever seen. You know, some people say, you know, I hypnotically rendered it, and then my camera shutter was just a long exposure, so it's a coincidence that I got a big hand on the camera. People in the room say, no, the spirits came and enlarged his hand. All of these interpretations are available in that image. And for me, it's still a mysterious picture, because it's one of the most magical things I've ever seen. And that's what happened there.
Yeah, as you say, both explanations are equally phenomenal, really.
Yes. No matter what, it's a phenomenal event. And the other thing that happened with Gordon, and this image is on my site too, is he went into a trance state and said, oh, you know, the spirits changed the shape of my face. I call them these ectoplasmic masks, and I look like I'm different people. And so I photographed him, and I did, you know, it was the only thing that was lighting this situation was a small green security light. So it was a very long exposure. And I did take a bunch of pictures of him, and he did look different in all of these pictures. And there was one in particular where he looked like he had a short little mustache. And I actually was afraid to show him this picture because I said, oh, it sort of looks like a Hitler mustache. And I definitely don't want to show him something like that. Like, oh, this is just strange. But I did end up showing it to him. He said, I love that picture. And I couldn't understand why. And then he brought me to his house and showed me a picture of his great-grandfather. And in this image, he is a spitting image of his great-grandfather. He even looks like he's wearing glasses in the picture, which he was not. And he does not have a mustache either. So this was one of my, I would say this is one of my stronger photographic synchronicities. And I really have no explanation for this. And I find it incredibly interesting.
I love how you keep referring to them as photographic synchronicities.
Yes.
The book is Seance, Spiritualist Ritual and the Search for Ectoplasm. Tremendous photographs by Shannon Taggart. I mean, even just aside from the phenomena, they're just beautiful. This is the beautiful photographs.
Thank you.
With a foreword by Dan Aykroyd. I've always been fascinated by the early 20th century photographs of ectoplasm. And, you know, we have to remind ourselves these are in the days before, you know, Photoshop and certain developing techniques and so forth, or playing around with double exposures. But let me get your take on, because you feature some of these in the book. These are not your photos. Mm-hmm. These were taken, again, over 100 years ago. What is your sense of these early photographs, this ectoplasm?
Well, these early photographs that you're talking about, they were, yeah, I didn't know that they existed. I was a professional photographer, and I studied photography, and I read so many photo history books, and these were not in any of the books that I studied from. So when I found out that they existed, I was shocked and fascinated, because they are really absurd and uniquely strange, and some of them are, you know, almost disturbing in a bizarre way, and there's an absurdity there to the, I think they're powerful images, but there's something so bizarre about them. I wanted to learn more. And what I found was that the pictures themselves, with their hokey feeling, some of them, you know, or they're like, they're strange, you know, they're strange, bizarre weirdness. I don't know how else to describe it. Really runs against the accounts of the people who were sitting in the rooms when they were happening. So,
right. I mean, in many cases, there's a photo. It looks like someone just has like a lace doily coming out of their ear. But then if you look a little closer, you see the image of, looks to be a woman's face in that doily.
Right. Right. So, and, you know, I think it was too, you know, they were blasting light in to make these images. And so whatever light they were blasting in kind of destroyed this ethereal experience that people were having. Now, there's many ways to look at these images, you know. Are they symbolic religious art? Are they scientific documents of a supernatural phenomena? Are they hoaxes? Are they real? I mean, all of that is kind of embedded. I mean, many spiritualists I speak with don't believe that all the images are real, but they do believe in the reality of ectoplasm, which is a whole other, you know, ectoplasm is a really controversial topic, I guess.
Well, you have a photo from 2013, and this was in Casadega, New York. Is there a large spiritualist community there?
Well, Casadega is right outside of Lilydale.
Ah, okay.
And so, as I said earlier, you know, in spiritualism, many of the, you know, it's a controversial topic to try and produce ectoplasm, which ectoplasm, I guess I should define it. It's a spiritual substance that you can see with the eyes, but it's a paradox because it's spiritual and material at the same time. So it's the spirit world showing itself in a material form. And so they don't, many of the spiritualist camps don't even allow ectoplasm seances because they don't want to be accused of fraud or have people think that they're trying to trick people. So many of these situations are done in private homes. And so that particular situation was done in a private home outside of Lilydale. They're not really advertised. It's pretty much word of mouth. And so you have to seek out the people who are still trying to do these Victorian style seances with the ectoplasm.
And this physical medium in Casadega, I'm going to mispronounce the name. Is it Kai Muge?
Yeah, Kai Muge. He's German. So, it usually has an umlaut and I spell it with an E. It's Muegge. Yes, Kai is, he's a German medium, and he's probably the most controversial medium working today. I think the Society of Psychical Research has dedicated two cover stories recently or semi-recently towards his mediumship. Yes, Kai is traveling around and doing ectoplasmic seances, and there are people who are studying him and trying to prove if he's real or if he's fake. And he's a big topic of controversy right now within spiritualism.
So describe the conditions under which this is your photograph, correct?
Yes. So I always usually pair the Kai image with one of the vintage spirit photo images because the experience of watching Kai seances is like watching one of these Victorian era spirit photographs come to life. You know, you sit in the dark and then a small light goes on and you see white substances with tiny pictures in them. And then all of a sudden, you know, then it disappears. So you're not even really sure what you saw. It's a very hypnotic, although sometimes it's longer. And he allowed me to photograph this. And when it happened, it looks just like the vintage images that you see. It looks almost exactly like them. So I always try to pair the vintage with the images of Kai. And, you know, there are people who believe Kai is the real deal. There are people who think Kai is doing a magic show. There are people who believe it's more complicated than that, that it's that it's somewhere in between, something called mixed mediumship, which that's a term that people use where it's like some of it's real, some of it's not. Yes, so he's very controversial.
So take me back as you're watching this with your own eyes, never mind mm-hmm. what you're capturing on film here, but as you're watching it, how does it begin with a little speck? I mean, it looks almost like a cotton gauze kind of stretched out or angel hair that we used to put on Christmas trees. How did it appear?
Right. Well, for Kai's, it's hard to tell because the lights go up slowly and then it's fully formed. So for me, it was different. You know, Charles Richer was the Nobel laureate who coined the term ectoplasm. And he always described it as a steam that kind of builds and morphs and takes shape and then becomes this big form. Where, with Kai, it's more like the lights slowly go up and then you see it fully formed and then the lights go down. So that was more of what I experienced when I saw Kai.
Are you able to touch it? Are you permitted?
There was one medium who allowed me to touch ectoplasm.
Ooh.
And that was a different medium. And it felt, you know, kind of moist and kind of, it's hard to describe. There was a wetness to it, and a lot of you'll hear in the accounts of it that people say that it has this very earthy smell, and so people will and that it's moist and that it's also light sensitive. That is what is said about ectoplasm too. So that's why you have to be careful about lights in the seance room. So yeah, it's a very a controversial topic within spiritualism.
Wouldn't it be great if we could just get a hold of some of this stuff and subject it to some rigorous scientific study?
I think that that has been done in the past. I believe there's even a sample of Helen Duncan's ectoplasm in the library at Cambridge in the UK. And I believe some of the studies there said part of it was albumin, and you know, when they pull it out, it very much looks just like cheesecloth, I've been told. I have not seen the sample yet. Mm. But I think there's some other, somebody told me at Brown University, there's also some ectoplasm in their archive, although I haven't fully investigated that yet. So it's rare, but there have been some samplings of it.
Oh, fascinating. I must mm-hmm. make the journey and check this out. Seance, Spiritualist Ritual and the Search for Ectoplasm, photographs by Shannon Taggart with a foreword by Dan Aykroyd. Tell me, what did Dan Aykroyd make of these photographs? Is he a believer?
Yeah, I asked him too, like, is it okay to describe you as a fourth generation spiritualist? And he said yes. And then I think it's also well known that he's very interested in UFOs,
yes,
too.
Yes.
So, yeah, but he's also interested in art, and art where art and the paranormal, you know, because he's such an amazing artist, mm-hmm. you know, a comedian, actor. So I think he found my project interesting because I was using art and photography to talk about spiritualism. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, it is a wonderful blending. Whether or not you're a believer in the paranormal, you're going to enjoy this book. How do people order Seance, Spiritualist Ritual, and the Search for Ectoplasm?
Well, there's a lot of information about the book at my website, shannontaggart.com. And there's you can click and pre-order the book. It's in pre-production. So as soon as I get it, I'm halfway sold. And as soon as I sell a few more copies, it'll go directly into production. And then it's going to be 350 full color pages.
Wow. 350. Yes. And
yes.
I guess a final question. I mean, has this sort of in any way changed the trajectory of your professional career? Do you want to explore this area more, do more photographs in this field?
Yes, I do. Like, I do feel, you know, what I'm doing is it's sort of a bizarre cross between anthropology and art, using photography, and taking it into that direction has been very interesting to me, and I hope to do more projects. I would love to photograph spiritism in Brazil, for one, once this project is completed. But I also I've created some personal work that is inspired by the project, too. I have a portrait series where I kind of play with the long exposure in order to render a portrait. And so it's touched a lot of my work, but I still do also some very straightforward commercial work as well.
Of course.
But yes, but it's really changed a lot for me. And I find the more I learn about spiritualism, the more interested I am in it.
Well, you are to be congratulated because it's spectacular. That's all I can say, Shannon.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Well, before I dim the lights in my spirit cabinet, I want to share with you some details on episode 44 of Conspiracy Unlimited. But before that, of course, it's Friday and time for the weekly draw, and we'll get to that in just a moment. I'll reach into the ginormous cheese puffs jar and choose a winner. One of the things I'm going to miss in the afterlife are cheeseburgers. But while we walk the earth, we must eat, and I do love to eat. If only the mighty Aphrodite wasn't such a good cook, I wouldn't be packing on the pounds. So really, it's all her fault. See what I did there? Anyway, but seriously, losing weight can be hard work. Unfortunately, the commitment to weight loss often fades. Many people simply give up in the first 90 days. The key is having the right mindset. Getting thin and staying that way lies in our thought processes, and hypnotherapy can make all the difference. Now, clinical hypnotherapist Dr. Steve G. Jones has created a set of 5 audio hypnotic sessions that apply the power of hypnosis to reprogram the mind and replace bad habits with vibrant, positive, new habits, and help you achieve natural and long-lasting weight loss. Weight loss hypnotherapy really works, and it's available now at a special discount. Isn't it time to lose those extra pounds? Check out weight loss hypnotherapy right now at smartclicksavings.com. That's smartclicksavings.com. All right, let's do the draw, shall we? Okay, and the winner of a Strange Planet CD is Larry Delanoy of Phoenix, Arizona. Larry, congratulations. If you want to get in on the draw, here's what you need to do. Rate and review this podcast. Grab a screenshot of that and then email it to me along with your name and mailing address. Email it to me at richardserrett1@gmail.com. richardserrett1@gmail.com. Coming up on episode 44 of Conspiracy Unlimited, John Rappaport of No More Fake News uncovers a nefarious chemical dosing experiment conducted by the National Academy of Sciences. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need... We need constant petting.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.